Good evening, everyone. Erev Tov. I want to start by saying thank you for having me here once again. It's my privilege. It's my honor. Thank you to all those who have worked very hard to put this together. Thank you for everyone who came out on this getting cold evening. Maybe by the next time that we'll have it, it'll actually be cold, and then we could say coming out on this freezing cold evening. We're in part two of either a series of three or four. Tonight, we're going to discuss the relationship that our teenagers are engaged in. I'll give you, of course, a briefing and so on and so forth. And hopefully, either the next lecture that we're going to give or the final lecture that we're going to give, we're still working on, depending how much we accomplish in this lecture, we're going to talk about how to communicate with our youth. So we spoke about the drugs and alcohol problem. We're going to speak about the relationships. And then we're going to talk about how to communicate to our youth. That's the idea of the program. Before I get into the nitty-gritty, I want to share with you something from this past week's parasha that we learned that's very relevant to our discussion tonight. We read in this past week's parasha the story about Yaakov and Esav. Avraham marries Sarah, they have Yitzchak, and then he has with Hagar Yishmael. Yitzchak marries Rivka. They have Yaakov and Esav, and I fast forward to the part where they're supposed to receive the blessings from Yitzchak, and then Esav is the elder, Yaakov gets the blessing, that whole story. The brothers are arguing, the brothers are fighting, and so on and so forth. But if we take a backtrack for a little bit, and we focus on something very interesting, we'll find a very important piece to our youth today as well. So Rivka is pregnant with her child. That's what she knows. And something very interesting happens. When she walks by a kenisa, the baby inside is kicking and kicking. I want to come out. I want to go. I don't want to be late to prayer. And when she walks by a church or a mosque of those days, the baby is kicking and kicking and kicking. I want to go. I want to go. I want to pray. And Rivka, at that point, is concerned. So she goes over to Shem. Shem was a great prophet. He was the mentor of Avraham Avinu. He was the son of Noach. He's been around. And she says, Shem, I don't know what to do. I have this child inside of me that when I go to the house of worship that we worship, he's eager to go out. And when I go to the house of worship of the Muslims, he's eager to go out. I don't know what to do. So our sages ask a question. What was Rivka's problem? What was her dilemma? So the kid's kicking. That's a sign of a normal baby. There's a fetus in there that's kicking. Baruch Hashem. That's what we want to see. Why are you so concerned? And our sages answer something absolutely amazing. Rivka says, before she knew that she had twins, if you're telling me that my son wants to bury himself in the kenisa, I'm a happy mom. I'll deal with it. If you're telling me that my son wants to bury himself in the mosque, I won't be the happiest mom, but I'll deal with it. But if you're telling me that my son is confused, now I have a problem. I want my child to be either or. Not every child is going to be perfect. Not every child is going to be the star student. Not every child is going to be the angel at home. And sometimes the child will be the absolute opposite. And she's willing to deal with the child no matter what he wants and whichever direction he wants to go, as long as the child picks a direction. And that's why she goes to Shem. And that's when Shem tells her it's not one child, it's two. You have twins, and one wants to go this way, and one wants to go that way. And one is Yaakov, and one is Esav. One becomes the leader of the Jewish people, and one becomes the enemy of the Jewish people. Two brothers, same home, same mother, same father. Completely different directions. Why do I feel that this is so important? Because when I look at our youth today, if there's one word I have to say about our youth, they are confused. When I talk to them, when they talk to me, when they're studying, when they're playing ball, when they're going shopping, whatever it is that they love to do, they're confused. Now the question really is, why are they confused? What is it that they can't put together and have that element of clarity in their life? Why can't they say, this is what I want and this is what's good for me and I'm going after it? And there's a variety of reasons. I'm going to share with you some of them. Some of them you're going to have to dig into your own pockets and figure out, because a lot of it is individual per child. But some of them are really global over all of our children. The first reason why I think that the children are confused, and please don't take this the wrong way, is because we are confused. And when the child looks at us and says, that's my mom and that's my dad, and we as mom and dad are confused, then they follow in our footsteps. Every young child wants to be like their father, as strong as their father, as tall as their father, as smart as their father, and so on and so forth. But when the child sees that the parent is confused, and we're relaying that message to them that we don't know where we're going, we don't know what we want, we're not sure ourselves, it depends on the day, it depends on who's around me, and at times that's how we make decisions, we're lacking in that consistency, they follow in our footsteps. But I'm not talking about parenting, and I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable, so I'll go into the kids, right back to them. Another very important reason why our children are so confused is because our children are lacking boundaries. And before I tell you the details of what I'm referring to when I'm talking about boundaries, it's very important to me to make note that there are so many amazing, amazing children. So many. And I want to say that majority of the kids are amazing. That's my personal opinion, my experiences with them in the classroom, out of the classroom, on group chats when it comes to different halachic questions that they may or may not have. It's amazing to see how awesome these children are. And that's thanks to you. That's the investment that you're making. That's the questions that you're asking. That's the care that you're giving. That's the concern, the genuine concern that you have. You're giving them a tremendous amount of awesomeness. And I'll share with you a couple of things. Number one, at least towards me, I'm not going to tell you what they say about you, but I'll tell you how they act towards me. The kavod that they have is amazing. It truly is amazing. Not to mention that their vocabulary is a little bit uncomfortable at times to hear, but that's maybe a dictionary that we need to update. Number two, the respect that they have for their heritage is so beautiful. Not to mention that they're all fighting over it, and everybody wants to be on the central board at the age of 12. And that's a good thing. In my opinion, that's a great thing, because if you look at what's happening in the communities, and you have a Thursday night event where you have kids that are running it and kids that are pushing it, that's proving the point that these kids are amazing. And if you go to the Gym Minyan, which I was lucky enough to go to on a Shavuot night, not to mention the Krispy Kreme, which I don't know if they give in the adult minyanim, which is a whole other level. But look at what these kids could do. And that's kudos, kol hakavod, to you as parents. So my discussion tonight is not about how unfortunate we are or how bit. No, the kids are great. But there are some things that they need from us, that they're asking for us to provide to them that we might not see. So I'd like to be that bridge between the child and the parent to just educate to what's out there. Now I want to focus on a couple of things that society is doing and that we need to try to be aware of. As you may or may not know, and I ask, please hear me to the end on this one, because it might start off like I'm going in the wrong direction. Society today is trying to build a society of gender equality, which means that man and woman are equal. Now, I'm in no way, shape, or form referring to professionalism. I'm not talking about occupation. I'm not talking about studies, academics. I'm not even going anywhere near that, because I am 100% in favor of everyone working. and 100% in favor of everyone doing what they love to do. We're not living in the days of Abraham Avinu where one were to be in a tent and that's what they did all day and all night and they didn't have anything else. Today we have the means and we should provide it to them. We should promote, and we do promote and support our children's growth professionally, educationally, and so on and so forth. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about the fact that we all know as adults that the male brain is very different than the female brain. And the female brain is very different than the male brain. We do not think the same. And what's happening today in society is, make them one. We're going to speak one language, and we're going to expect everyone to learn that language, to speak that language, and to communicate with that language. But what's the problem with that method? The problem is that now the boys are not boys, because they're trying to speak like girls, and the girls are not girls because they're trying to speak like boys, and no one could communicate. And I see this in front of my eyes every single day. And this to me is painful. So it's not about, again, I'm stressing it so I should be clear. It's not about their future in the professional world. It's more about, do they speak the correct language for their gender? And let me give you a couple of examples. I'm going to refer back to how I grew up, and everyone's going to translate it into their own way of growing up. When I was growing up as a boy, what was the only thing that we wanted to do, especially if there was a girl in the room? The only thing we wanted to do is find a way to get this girl to eat cockroaches. That's all we wanted to do. We didn't care about how pretty she was. We didn't care how popular she was. We didn't care about anything else, how smart she was. Our goal was, it's either a worm or a cockroach. That's it. We didn't want to play with the girls. We didn't want to socialize with the girls. We weren't interested in talking to the girls, and this is not a religious thing. We wanted to climb trees. We wanted to kill birds. We wanted to grow bears in our backyard. And we wanted to play ball and be the jockey that everybody wants to be. Not so we could get the cheerleaders, but so that we could be stronger than the kid that's next to us. And I ask you, do you see that today in the boys of 2017, 2018? And let's go to the girls for a minute. And what did the girls want when I was growing up? What did the girls shoot for, aim for when I was growing up? I know if I'm talking about my sisters or my sister's friends, it wasn't all about how many guys could I get. It wasn't all about what could I wear to seduce, to impress, to be popular. Yes, they wanted to be popular, but they wanted to be popular amongst themselves. It wasn't all about how does the boy see me. It was about how do my friends see me. And we had the same thing as boys. So when I were to talk to a girl as a teenager, I wouldn't give a whole language. It wasn't a whole poem I'm writing. It was, I hate you, you're a girl, that's it. That was the way we spoke. Today, when you talk about how these boys are talking to the girls, they're speaking to them in a feminine language. So it's taking away from the way that their brain processes things. They're seeing things differently. Okay? And let me be a little bit more particular. If a boy wants something, and it's irrelevant to what it is that they want, and in order to get that, they have to face someone. Okay, so we'll talk about a girl and a boy. And a girl and a boy are in a room, and they want to hold hands. I'm not going to go any more graphic than that. They want to hold hands. So before they hold hands, then the boy says something to the girl, and the girl has to say something to the boy. Okay? The boy looks at the girl and says, I just want you to know that you're very ugly, and you're extremely overweight, and you're really, really not smart, and I really think that you'll never be popular, and you're just a waste of space in this world. Now can I hold your hand? What will the girl say? I hope she says no. I hope. Because that's the way it's supposed to work. Because if you don't make me feel good, and you don't build me up, and you don't make me that princess or that queen or that special, I don't want to have anything to do with you. Now let's turn this around towards the boy. And the girl says to him, "You're very ugly. You smell bad. You have no friends. Nobody wants to be your friend. Nobody cares for you. You're dumb. You'll never be popular. You can't throw a football. And you can't even kick a soccer ball if it had no air in it. Now can I hold your hand?" What he's going to say? "Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm ready. As long as I can hold your hand." Why? Because a man is a finisher. We don't care for the details. When we build a home, the woman wants to match the doorknob to the valet and the crown molding. The light has to shine exactly perfectly on the picture, bounces off onto the tile so that the reflection has to match her shoes on Saturday night when her friends are coming over. What is the only thing on the man's mind when he comes to build a home? "Please make sure that the toilet seat is comfortable." But that's where he's going to spend most of his time. And that's the bottom line. That's how we were bred. That's how we were made. And that's what makes a perfect relationship. Because if we were both focusing on the details, we'd kill each other. We wouldn't be able to live in a home. And if we both only care that it's strong, and I want a windproof house, and a fireproof house, and a noiseproof house, and a foodproof house, and a gasproof house, and I want a house that you could... Who's going to war with your home? Who's taking boulders and throw every night at your home? Nobody. I want a strong... So if we could understand that our teenagers are growing up and they don't identify their language, so boys are not identifying their language and girls are not identifying their language, this is creating a clash. It's creating confusion, which is leading to no boundaries. Allow me to get a little bit further. I don't know, I can't speak for anyone else that's in this room. I could speak for myself. As boys growing up, we didn't care to sit around the couch and schmooze. It just didn't interest us. I didn't really care what was going on in my friend's life. He didn't really care what was going on in my life. As long as we had a good time and we laughed, and as long as we were just tired when it was time to go to sleep, we had the best time. And it didn't make a difference what we did to achieve that. We could run in circles around the table and play a game of who could catch who. Nobody. Good. So let's keep on going. And girls, the way I saw my sisters growing up and my mom, is on the phone with their friends. "What did you do? Who'd you do with? How'd you do it? How did you do it? So many questions. Pesach night, manishtana, everything every night, manishtana. Whole Haggadah every night. "What, you got to that one? Why don't you say that one? Because when I said that one, and it's all, this is what I heard. That one, what one? Which one, which, could you say something? Was it a chair? Was it a table? Was it a person? Was it a food?" And they know what they're saying. "That one, oh no, that one is terrible. But the other one, absolutely." It's all remazim. It's like Kabbalah. It's the depth of the depths of conversation. We'll have a marriage class one night. We'll talk about how to cope with that on a different level. But what I do want to achieve is to understand that when you look at the average teenager today, what are they doing in the summer? They're sitting around on a couch with girls on their phones talking to each other in the same group chat. You think I'm joking? I know you think I'm joking. I'm going to tell you a story. This is a true story. It's a sad story. It's a true story. And I hope that our children are not victims to this. One evening, I took my wife out to Sushi Fusion. It wasn't an anniversary. I know I wouldn't go there for an anniversary. We just went out for dinner, something simple, quick. And I walk into Sushi Fusion, and I'm waiting to be seated. And, you know, the small tables in the center, there were two girls sitting on this small table in the center. So we're waiting for our seat, and I'm looking around and saying hi to whoever I know. And they're looking at the menu, and they're taking pictures of the menu, and they're... Okay. Then one of the girls pulls out her phone and start to text someone. So I started to like boil a little bit, because I'm very sensitive that when there's a human in front of you, you should communicate with that human. That's just like a normal, like that's the way it should be, in my opinion. Unless you're alone, so then talk to yourself. That's also a good idea, but not to... So the other girl pulls out her phone, and she starts texting as well. She takes a picture of her menu, and starts texting as well. And now it's already coming to a point where I'm losing my appetite. So I think they sat us down. My wife must have been sitting already. And I'm still standing there in the entrance, and I just can't get my focus off of these two girls. And I decided I got to do something. And I wasn't being like, you know, a superhero. This is entertainment for me. That's how I enjoy myself. So I went over to these two girls, and I said, "Excuse me, do you mind if I ask you a question?" "Oh, sure. How can I help you?" I said, "Do you realize that there's someone sitting in front of you? There's a real person. She's like real. She's breathing and you're breathing. Did you realize?" And they start cracking up. I'm like, "What, you didn't realize that there was someone sitting in front of you? You went out to eat together." She says, "No, you don't get it. Let me tell you what's happening." "Okay, tell me." And she says, "I'm sitting here and I didn't know what to eat." This is a typical that, this, that, here, there, just on a menu. "It's sushi. It's rice inside, it's rice outside. It's really not complicated. There's tuna, there's yellowtail, and there's salmon. You don't have that many. Even the kani is not real shrimp. It's imitation crab. It's really a small menu, but it's just long with different funny names." And I didn't know what to eat. So what I did was, we have a group chat. So I sent in my group chat a picture of the menu to ask my friends, "What should I choose?" I said, "Okay, this is getting interesting. Thank God I'm getting my money's worth tonight." It really gets better. Hold on, I didn't even start. So I'm like, okay, I see. I could see the drama. This is a very big decision. Is it going to be sushi with salmon avocado or avocado salmon? That's a tough one, I know. And then she says to me, what's funny is that now, the girl sitting across is part of the same group chat, and her phone rang, so she checked the text message, which is from the girl who's sitting in front of her. So what does she do? She responds in the group chat a picture of the menu and telling her, "I'm ordering this. Maybe you should order that." And then they totally went off on a conversation about something, nothing to do with the sushi anymore, in the group chat, in front of each other. So my question, I had just one question. Who's paying? That's all I wanted to know. Because you're not sitting with each other, so it's not fair that you should pay for her if she's paying for you. And this is a true story. This is 100% the way it happened. And I even laughed like you were laughing, because I really couldn't hold myself. And I enjoyed that meal so much. And now I love to go to Sushi Fusion just for that, to see more people sitting on that small table. But think about it for a second. Think about what and where our children's minds are. They can't make the simplest decision of which sushi roll to order. And they need the guy to give approval that you bought the right sushi roll. And they have to get their friends to come in to eat sushi together. I challenge the students, and I do the following challenge to them. And I ask them to do the following. I say, I dare you to sit alone. And they all tell me, "Oh, that's no big deal." I said, no. To sit alone with no phone. I'm not getting into the technology, social media discussion. That's not tonight's discussion at all. Why do I challenge them to do that? Why do I challenge them to sit alone without anyone and without any type of communication? Because that's the only way they're going to identify who they are. That's the only way they're going to realize that I have my own identity and I could make my own decisions. So what's happening today is the guy is waiting for the girl's approval, which never was. The girl is waiting for the guy's approval, which he's enjoying to play with. And at the end of the day, where are they getting with this? So what we need to do as parents is to start to teach the guys that they're guys. And to remind the girls that they're girls. And there's a way that a girl thinks, and that there's a way that a boy thinks. And it's completely, completely different. And that there are boundaries. Because these boundaries are getting crossed so many times every single day. I'm going to share with you crossing of a boundary. again, a true incident that took place. There was a girl who approached me with concern. She didn't know what to do. What was the problem? The problem is that she's in a relationship, and she chose that she wanted to be Shomer Negiah. And I'll explain what that is for anyone who might not know. Shomer Negiah is when pre-marriage, whoever it is that's dating, they saw that they don't want to have any physical contact. And there are some beautiful reasons for that, and it's also difficult in its own ways. But this was her decision. And she was dating a guy who kept on telling her how much he loves her and how much he respects her. Because you need to hear what your children are saying, and I also want you to know what your children are hearing. How much he loves her and he respects her, and like he could see his whole life with her. At the age of 15, they're determining. And how much he knows like what's right for her and how he could guide her, because he also went through so much in his life at the age of 15. And my one question is, do you know how to tie your shoelaces? And if you could say yes to that, you went through a lot in your life, because that's a challenge. And he knows how to deal with her parents. He knows. He's already the in-laws. He's there already. And he's going to teach her how to speak to her parents at the age of 15. Right? It's all happening at the age of 15, 16, 17. And she made this decision. And she says, Rabbi, this is a decision that I'm making. I feel that it's good for me, and this is what I want to do. I said, okay, so what's the problem? She says, well, my boyfriend is not so down, meaning to say he's not so interested in me being Shomer Negiah, and he's pressuring me. So I said, well, listen, the way I see it, I don't know who the fellow is till today, but the way I see it is if he really respects you and you set a boundary, then he'll respect the boundary, because that's what true love is. Part of true love is when we have boundaries and we respect each other's boundaries, our personal space. And the second that she sent him a text saying, listen, you know, if you really love me like you say you do, you will respect my boundaries. His response was, lose my number, never call me again. Now this happens at 15, 16, 17, and 18, and 19, and 20, and so on and so forth. Why is this happening? Why don't the kids have boundaries? Why do they feel that they have the right to be adults when they're still maturing as children? So there's a variety of reasons why, and we can't cover all of them, even if we had a four-hour lecture. But I could give you a couple of reasons why. And the first reason why is because every person, every human being has a cup. This is the analogy. And the cup will be full. The question is, what will it be full with? Will it be full with us as parents in their life? Will it be full with their friends who take over? What will it be filled with? That's the bottom line question. What is the priority in our children's lives? And if the priority in our children's lives is that they're making the decisions, we have a big problem. Yes, we need to give them independence, of course. Yes, we want to disconnect the umbilical cord, of course. Yes, we want to teach them the ropes of life. Yes, we want them to experience. We want them to experiment. We want them to adventure, absolutely. But we also want to know what those experiences are, what those adventures are, what they're exposed to in a relationship. And now I'm going to share with you something frightening. In my opinion, absolutely frightening. One of the classes that I gave, we had a discussion about relationships, because I wanted to hear from the kids a little bit what they feel. And there was a girl who told me that she really doesn't want to be physically active with anyone. She's not interested. She has zero interest whatsoever. But she's being pressured to. And my question to you is, who do you think is pressuring this girl to be physically active? Thank you. Thank you. I didn't think that was the answer. The answer is her girlfriends. See, you would think, the way I think, the guy's macho. What do you mean? I'm on the basketball team. I'm the captain, El Capitan. And everyone's El Capitan. And I'll take you to Sushi Fusion. And you don't have to take pictures of your menu and send to your friends. I'll tell you what to eat. That's what I thought it would be. But the answer is no. That happens too. But more than the pressure from the boy, the girls are pressuring each other. Why? Because if they once broke the boundary, now they feel lonely. They feel guilty. They feel upset. They feel degraded. So I need you to join me in this party. I need you to do what I did so that I am not alone. So now you're cool. Now you're part of us. And what happens if they don't? What happens if they say, well, you know what? Too bad. It doesn't end with, okay, fine, no problem. All right, you're right, your choice. There are no boundaries. There's no boundaries between boy and boy. There's no boundary between girl and girl. So the girl's going to cross that boundary in a second and start hopping over it like it doesn't even exist. And whether it's rumors or whether it's name calling or whether it's bullying to a certain extent and so on and so forth. So my question is, who is there to protect our teenagers? If our daughter or our son is in that situation, who's standing up for them? Because they're not standing up for themselves. And the reason why is because they don't have the tools to do it yet. And their friends are not standing up for them because they're the ones who are promoting it. So who's standing up for our children? Who is letting our daughter know that you could go to a party, or you could go to an event, or you could go to a friend's house, or you could go to a social scene, and you could add on to the all that you could go to, but you need to know that you're safe. You need to know that no matter what, you will be protected, you will be fine, you don't have to buckle under pressure. Who is filling those shoes? It's not the school you're sending your kids to. It's us, the parents. We must be there for them. But here's the catch. We must be there for them as a team. It's not going to work if out of 5,000 parents, 100 are pro and the other ones are MIA, missing in action. It's not going to work. Because we see that the greatest kids will buckle under pressure eventually. And I want to share with you again now another level of projection for the future, just a little bit. We all know that in today's day, there is a major, major, I don't know if we all are open to it, but or admitting to it, there's a major, major dating crisis. I'm involved with it. I get it all the time. Rabbi, could you find me someone? Rabbi, could you help me find someone? You know, I'm a good person. I have this, I have that. Whether it's the guy who has a great job or the girl who's just an awesome girl from a wonderful family. And it takes so long for them to find someone to settle down. So there might be, again, there are a variety of reasons of why this is happening. But I'm going to talk from the teenage perspective why this is happening and how it's leading to the situation becoming worse and worse and worse. So if the teenager, doesn't have any boundaries, and that means that they get to dress like an adult, they get to eat like an adult, they get to vacate like an adult, and they get to have physical interaction / intimate relationships like adults, so I have one question. Why are they rushing to be an adult when they're 20, 30, and 40 if they could be an adult when they're 15, 16, and 17? What's the rush? Why should they rush to get married? And I'm not saying anyone should rush to get married. Don't get me wrong. But I believe we all want our children to be married. And we all want them to be married at their right time. The right time is the best time, of course. But sometimes we see that the right time is coming and the right time is going. And they're great kids. They're not lacking anything. And they come from awesome homes, which are also not lacking anything. They're ready. They're ready to do it. And we're behind them 100% as parents. But yet, they don't step into that ring. And the answer is that if a 15-year-old could have intimate relations, why should they wait until they're 18, 19 for the Mr. Right or Mrs. Right? 20, 21, whatever age you're comfortable with. I'm not trying to dictate an age that your children should get married. Why should they wait? What's the reason? And I'll take it one step further. Even 5 years ago, so it's moving really, really fast, the one thing that we were always, I was always able to say with true pride is that the girls never gave in. The guys, God bless them. God bless them. You know, it is what it is. But the girls, nope. No way, no how, not till I'm married. When I'm married, I'll be married. We could talk about physical, or we could talk about other types of interactions. 5 years later, now, that's not the case anymore. Ladies and gentlemen, it's frightening that they're losing self-value. They're losing that concept of I'm worth something. They're losing that sense of like, it's important to me to be sacred. It's important to me to save it for that Mr. Right. It's important to me to save it for the purpose that was originally designed. Because now I'm not even talking about college. I'm not talking about college. That's so far away. I'm talking about today, 15, 16-year-olds. I can't say you're average. I'm not going to say the average 16-year-old. But I'm going to say a lot of them. A lot of them. And they have a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of opportunities out there for them. And their friends are all on with it. They're all okay with it. They all, no problem. We got you. Don't worry. We got the door. We'll watch. That's our kids. And they don't know better. And they're impulsive. Because they think that it's going to make me popular. Or that's what all my girlfriends are doing, all my guy friends are doing. One of the most scariest and disgusting things that I've ever heard, and I'm so sorry that I'm telling this to you, because I feel that it's not of your kavod for me to even say this, but I really want to try to bring this point home, was a boy who went to college, and I don't know why he chose to tell me, I can't figure it out till today, comes back after college and says to me, Rabbi, you know what my goal was for the year? How many girls could I have? He's proud. And he comes to tell a rabbi, of all people in the world. Couldn't find someone, the guy in the sushi, tell him, don't tell me. What? So many people in Sushi Fusion would love to hear. Why do you think I want to know this? And he's so proud. He's so proud, like I actually exceeded my goal. I'm A+, valedictorian. Because that's what's on their mind. In today's day, it's so easy for them. So it becomes a game. It becomes a challenge. And I always try to tell them, and I say the same to you, that every girl is a daughter. It's not a piece of meat. It's not a bag of potatoes. It's not just your entertainment system. You have Xbox, and Xbox One, and Xbox Two, and PlayStation, whatever else you want to be busy with. You don't need to be busy with this. And we have to help our children through this. And I'm never going to forget this. I must have said this story numerous times. I don't believe I said it in the previous lecture. I was officiating a wedding a little while back. And in the wedding, there was a woman who approached me and said, Hi, Rabbi, how are you? I'm used to hearing that. That's not foreign. I said, Baruch Hashem, everything is wonderful. But I couldn't figure out who it was. And I'm trying to work, like, where do I know this person from? It looks familiar, but I can't figure out who it was. I'm very confused. So my wife was with me, and I said, Honey, do you know who that is? Because I can't put my finger in it, and I'm embarrassed. Because if I see them, and then they're going to tell me something, I won't know who there is. I'm going to look like, I don't know who it is either. Sorry, can't help you. She was around my height. I'm not so short, I'm not so tall. Around my height. And I would probably put her at like 30, 35, if I had to study. That Monday, I go to school, and a freshman comes over to me, says to me, Rabbi, wasn't that wedding awesome? I'm like, wedding awesome? That's way past your bedtime. What do you know about weddings? So what do you mean? I saw you by the wedding. I said hi to you. I said, you said hi to me? Well, I didn't drink anything, so I don't know what you're talking about. And then I said, oh my gosh, that woman was this freshman. And I said, wait, let me just let's draw this out again. She was wearing elevators. Skyscrapers. We don't go small, we go all the way. Go big or go home. And she was wearing a gown, which I can't describe, I'm sorry. And her hair was mashallah. And there was at least 7-8 inches of makeup, at least, easy. You cut the hatan's pie, you'd probably fit it in somewhere there. Easy, this is easy. I'm talking to you, I'm a rabbi who doesn't understand these things so well. And then I said to myself, wait, so if she's going to a wedding and she looks like she's 30 years old, why can't she act like she's 30 years old? And what do 30-year-old people do? Yep, that's exactly what we do. So if she could act that way, dress that way, go out that way, till the wee hours of the night that way, and we don't know about it, or maybe we do know about it to a certain extent, but we're not fully aware, then even the kids that don't want to, and there are a lot of kids that don't want to, and they express it, they say it, I don't want to, it's not what I'm looking to do, it's coming to a point where they have no choice. Because this is what they're given, and this is the situations that they're put into, and there's no backing, like I said originally, there's no support system, or it's lacking, perhaps. It's not 100% where it has to be. And that's why we see these outcomes. Next point. The next point is to understand that there's a certain sense of emptiness in our children. When you have a conversation with a child, and I have this all the time, and a child starts to open up about beautiful, deep things, I don't mean personal things, I don't mean family things, that's not what it's all about. Things that they actually thought about. For example, I had a conversation with the average teenager over the past couple of weeks, and I asked a question, and the question was, did you ever realize that your generation, as in the teenagers, are very, very angry? And they all stood and said, I don't know, are we angry? What do you mean, are we angry? I think you're onto something there. I think you're getting it. What do you mean I'm getting it? No, we're not angry. Okay, so if that's not angry, then I'm not sure what is angry. And then I ask another question. And my question always are the same. Is there anyone in this room, and I'm not asking you, that never raised their voice to their parents? Just raise your hand. Not in this room, I asked the kids. Just raise your hand. I don't know if they're Charlie horse or maybe their hands are duct taped and they can't raise their hand. But is there anyone who could raise their hand and say that? So I really diluted. It's not fair. I have to be honest. I asked, do you know anyone who never raised? Because I don't want to accuse anyone here of never answering back to their parents. Do you ever know anyone? And they can't answer me honestly, saying, I don't answer back my parents. Because it's normal. Why is it normal? Because they have no boundaries. Again, it comes back to the same place. If a child is lacking in boundaries when they come home, they could do what they want, when they want, with whom they choose to do it. Even if we set guidelines, and this is the thing, you got to realize that even if you're going to take away their phone, and you'll take away their computer, and you'll disconnect the Wi-Fi in the house, they find a way. They have it all worked out. And you know how I know? Because when they come to class, and a teacher, not myself, wants to take away their phone, and they can't, because my dad already took it away. So then how do you know what's going on with everybody? Because I have a watch. And on my watch, I could blow up the world. I don't know what they could do these days. So they have their ways, and their friends are totally backing them up. When I was younger, if my dad took something away from me and I came to my friends, I was embarrassed. I would say that a dinosaur ate it. I was embarrassed to say that I got in trouble. But today, they're ganging up on us. We're wrong for trying to correct them. In their circles, oh, my dad again took away my phone. Let's see how long he takes away for this time. I have a spare phone at home. I'll give it to you. And all they need is Wi-Fi, because all they use is WhatsApp. And then it's all over from there. Now, I'm not trying to tell you to investigate and strip search them and put metal detectors in your home. That's not where I'm going at all. I'm just trying to perhaps shed some light on what they want from us. They want to know how to be in a relationship. When I teach only boys, or I teach only girls, I can't explain to you how different it is than when I teach boys and girls together. And it's not better or worse at all. When I teach boys and girls in the same room, the boy will always ask, excuse me, the dumbest questions. Always. The dumbest questions. So Rabbi, do you lift? What? Do you lift? Do you lift weights? And my answer is in between each lecture. What am I supposed to answer? I have to be cool also, right? And the girls, what do they ask? Exactly, nothing. They don't ask anything. They're too shy to ask. Why? Because if they ask something genuinely and someone didn't like it, they become a target. If they really have a question, they won't ask it because they can't ask it because someone will say something in a chat or out of the chat or to their face or in front of me. No boundaries. But when I teach them separately, it's unbelievable. That's when I tell you how I know that they're so amazing. Because there's so much inside if we could just figure out a way to make the boy a boy and make the girl a girl. To let them feel comfortable in their own skin. Not to feel that I have to be ahead of everyone else. And this goes also in many different ways, academically. Do you know the pressure that these kids, some of the kids, are putting themselves under? And I'm not talking about success. Those have to work hard. We should all work hard. We wake up in the morning and work hard. Whether a mother or father, it's irrelevant. We all work hard. So working hard is fair. But when the whole reason of why they're doing something is only because of the other person, that's when I say that we have a red flag, a concern, an alarm that we have to put up in our head and say, what could I do? What can I do to make a difference in my child's life? Do I know that when they're getting a text from that friend, what is that text saying? I don't want you to read it. It's not about being in their business. Because 99% of it is nonsense and the other 1% is irrelevant. That's for certain. But if we could see how they're feeling, how they're doing, when they come home, what did they go through in that day? There are some amazing kids that I see that are helping other students, helping other kids, and the other child wants to receive, but they're concerned. Could I receive? What would happen if I do? What would people say about me? And so on and so forth. That whole image, that whole concept of image. So if we lead by example, that it's not all about my image, it's about who I am, and I'm comfortable in my skin for who I am, our kids are going to soar. Our kids will look at us and say, I know that I have you. I would love to create an atmosphere where the children's first go-to is us as parents. Unfortunately, I tell you, it's not the case. It's not the case at all. We don't have the kids comfortable saying, last night I had this conversation with my dad. It was unbelievable. We spoke about this, 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 and this, and that. And what I find funniest is that when you do have a child who comes to tell their parents, what's the parents' reaction? There's more you're not telling me. Tell me more, tell me more, tell me more. I'm telling you. No, no, tell me more, tell me more. Tell me. No, but I'm telling you. Do you want me to go do something so I can come back and tell you? Because I didn't have that on the agenda today. That's really, in some cases, what's happening. So the child says, all right, let's open the doors, let's do this. We're ready to talk. And the child opens up. And they open up a little bit. And then we try to grab it all. So there's a certain element here that we have to give them their space, let them feel independent, let them experiment, let them experience, let them adventure. Absolutely. It opens their mind. It makes them healthy. A child who walks and never falls will never walk. We all did it. We all scuffed our knees. And we got back up and we kept on going. But if the child doesn't have the ability to come home and release, because they're scared of what could happen, or maybe there isn't enough time, or maybe there isn't enough interest. I don't know what could be the reasons why. They're going to go somewhere else. And unfortunately, the first place that they go to, sadly, is their friends. And their friends themselves are so confused, and their friends themselves have no boundaries, so the advice they give them is how to fight against us, the parents. I've had children who have come to me and says, Rabbi, my friend is telling me to do this and it doesn't sound right. I love my dad, I love my mom too much. It doesn't sound right, Rabbi. Should I do it or not? Well, obviously I'm going to tell them no. Just feel comfortable. But the idea that this is the advice that they're getting is because it's the blind leading the blind. So we need to try to tap into this with them and understand that they have to know that we are here for them. That's A. They have to know that we are there. We are here for them. Genuinely. And that means that we also have to learn on our own right how to control ourselves and be a little bit more patient and be listeners as opposed to just want to impose our thought, because things are happening in their life really, really fast. I'm going to end with the following idea. And I'm also going to give a chance for anyone who wants to ask questions. I'll stop the recording and I'll stay here for as long as you would like to ask questions, so anyone who wants to leave is welcome to leave and so on. I'll end with the final idea. The goal is to provide our children with healthy relationships. If we could express this to them, that there's two paths to choose in every decision that we make. There's Yaakov and there's Esav. If you choose to be Yaakov, great. That's wonderful. If one chose without noticing the Esav path, we will never leave you alone. They need to hear this. The kids need to hear that we will never leave you alone. It is not okay to say that a kid is doing well and they're at the top, then we're going to kudos and we're going to give them whatever and clap for them all day and all night. But the kid that's struggling, better yourself, better yourself, better yourself. On the contrary, when Yaakov Avinu, where the Torah tells us that he focused on Esav, he didn't focus on Yaakov. Yitzchak, his father, didn't focus on Yaakov. He focused on the one that was troublesome. Why did he focus on the one that was troublesome? Because the one who's making it is making it. There's no need for us to invest in him. But the one who is struggling socially, it's not always the best decision to tell our child who's not ready to go into a big social event, go. It's not always the right move. Sometimes it is, but it's not always the right move. It's not always the right move to throw them into the pool and say, learn how to swim. They don't always succeed. And then it brings them down further, and their kids know it. And kids, children, teenagers are ruthless. They don't mean it. They just are. So it's our job to make sure that we tell them, no matter what, Yaakov or Esav, you are our child. I hope that this shed a little bit of light and it gives us the strength to give our children what they want from us, what they need from us, and then to receive in return so much more from them. May we all merit to share in their semachot together. We should always see our children healthy and strong and successful. Amen. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful night.